Blog Talk Radio.
Drugs are not
not legal in the United States, but I remember a time back in the 1980s when I was a teenager, the ex-president Reagan waged a war on drugs, and Miss Nancy Reagan did public service announcements. They were mainly showed in the schools. But this war on drugs has hurt many black Americans more than any other race in this country. That's how I feel. How do you feel about that?
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question.
Okay, it says, I said back in the 1980s, ex-president Reagan waged a war on drugs, and his wife, Miss Nancy Reagan, did public service announcements that were mostly shown in the school system.
Right.
And
okay.
When the war on drugs started, it was mostly targeted, I feel like, black Americans. And do you believe that the war on drugs has hurt black Americans more than any other race in this country?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The war on drugs that that Reagan instituted was also exacerbated by President Reagan's three strikes and you're out, and also the other law that distinguished between powder and crack cocaine. Where, you know, I think it was 10 times the sentence, and even more than that. But if you had the same weight of powder cocaine and crack cocaine, you would get a harder sentence with the crack cocaine. So, it started with the war on drugs, and I guess as a part of the war on drugs, became the determinant sentencing, the disparity between powder and crack cocaine, the three strikes and you're out laws. So yeah, it has definitely had its impact on the black American community.
Do you believe this is somewhat the new Jim Crow?
Well, when I look at it as it relates to disempowering a group of people and taking advantage of that disempowerment in a way to make money, compare the new Jim Crow with the old Jim Crow. However, the what we're seeing today is a subtle movement that's not as in the face as the Jim Crow of past, but I think it has the same impact where today's Jim Crow is a way of controlling a group of people that otherwise cannot be controlled, and I think that it definitely impacts poverty or impoverished people.
Okay. All right. Do you believe that black Americans and perhaps even Mexicans are racially profiled at a higher percentage, Mr. James Costin?
Yeah. People of color are, as a whole, the statistics show that out of every 100,000 black men, 3,000 of them are incarcerated, as compared to 478,000 for every 100,000 white men. And for Hispanic men, the number is approximately 1,200 per every 100,000. So if you look at the statistics that you mentioned earlier, where black America only is only being 13%, approximately 13% of the American population, and out of every 100,000 black men, you have 300,000 being incarcerated, compared to 478,000. For every 100,000, yeah, you actually can tell the it shows the disparity, and yes, it is very much targeted toward people of color.
This also happens in the rural area. I know you're doing urban study, you know, the urban study. But this also happens in rural areas. It really does. It's all over America, so it seems to me.
Yeah, and probably even more so, the numbers are high in urban areas because of the density, and this is kind of low-hanging fruit for the criminal justice system, where any time an officer needed to get a particular an officer could ride through a community in urban America and find somebody that's doing something deviant, as opposed to the rural areas. Now, I think that the ratios are pretty much the same in rural America. It's just not as dense as it is in urban America.
Okay. All right. What do you think about the trauma that blacks have suffered over the years? Let's say the last 500 years of slavery, segregation, and then integration. Do you believe there's been trauma for black America?
Yeah, I'm from a school of academicians that actually encouraged us to always look at a 500-year window. And if you were to take a snapshot of what I'm in the Atlanta area, if you were to take a snapshot of the rural Atlanta area today, it's very easy to just look at the snapshot and say that this is horrible, this is deplorable, we need to make some movements, and so why don't people pull themselves up by the bootstrap? And it's very easy to make that assumption. But if you were to back away from it just enough to get a wide-angle view of the history of blacks, or basically the history of America, you can get a better picture. Excuse me. You get a better picture of what has caused some of the conditions that we are seeing today, and the trauma being. As far away as colonization in Africa to being enslaved or put on boats and brought to America enslaved and in a foreign land. And I believe that trauma can be transferred intergenerationally. So there are generations of African Americans who have similar life course trajectories, as you see generations of white America who have similar life course trajectories. However, they are of supremacy, and so yeah, I think that Black America is traumatized, but I also believe that white America was traumatized. We just don't know when that trauma happened for them, but. For any group of people to feel that there's a need to take another group of people and treat them the way that black Americans or black people on this planet have been treated, there's signs that there may be something wrong, but that's not what this talk show is about. But black America has been traumatized because of all of this, all of these instances of hatred and supremacy. And I think that can be transferred intergenerationally.
Okay. All right, generation. It can be transferred. Now, I know we're still talking about the criminal justice system. I want to get a little bit off that for just a minute or two. There's a very large financial divide between the poor and the rich. Very large.
There's a large what? Excuse me.
Financial divide between the poor and the rich.
Okay.
So I have to ask you, do you think that the financial divide has anything to do with the probation sentences in prison that all the money blacks have to pay out?
I don't think that there's a lot of money being made from probation and fines, and I don't think that's if you have to look at the bigger picture to actually see the advantages in incarceration. Yeah, of course, there is some revenue generated by fines, but I don't think that's where the major monies are being made. I proffer that the major monies are being made by the corporations who employ the services of incarcerated people for little or no cost. I'm not going to say that there's anybody that's paying absolutely nothing for these services, but I believe that the cost is minimal, compared to the cost that they would have to pay you or I if we were to work in the factories manufacturing the items for these corporations. Very little of that money trickles down to the inmate who actually does the job. So what makes the industry lucrative is when the demand outweighs the supply. So when the demand for this labor outweighs the supply of this labor, then buildings or private institutions are being created to meet the demands for labor. And there's a huge list of corporations that use inmate labor. And for I have actually even heard that some of the products that we are thinking of being made in other countries, in fact, not being made in other countries at all, but being made right here in our prison and by our prison population.
Okay. All right. Now, you said something earlier about disparaging hiring and hiring practices and wages. Were you talking about the prison population or just in general?
Well, just in general. So one of the marginalization of the Black American experience is hiring practices and wage earning practices or paying practices that skew the life trajectories for the Black American, particularly men. But once a person has actually that's even before being introduced to the criminal justice system. But once that introduction has been made, then you add on the fact that you're an ex-offender, that further diminishes your opportunities and stigmatizes you in your efforts at becoming employable or employed, and it actually stigmatization actually goes it reaches into the actual African American community. So very often we see Black folks talk about other Black folks who have been introduced into the criminal justice system, and that stigma reaches deeply, and it not only does it tamper the life trajectory of the ex-offender or life course trajectory of the offender, it actually affects the ex-offender deeply in his spirit, in his emotions, in his mind.
Now, you specifically said Black men, but I like to also say, and I'm not saying, what I'm saying is the incarceration of Black females is definitely on the rise too.
You're absolutely right. I was just sitting in on a class that mass incarceration has been the foci of this class in general. But tonight's discussion was about Black women and the different programs out there for Black women, and I apologize for being gender specific. I just happen to do that because that's what my current research project is on. It's basically on black men and nonviolent drug involved black offenders.
Okay. Now, we're gonna take a break. Give you time to rest your mouth. Please don't hang up. Listeners, you listen to Show Talk with Angela Butler. We have Mr. James Costin Jr. on. Dad said it right. He's discussing the drug war. We're discussing the drug war, the prison population, the unfairness of the criminal justice system, among other things. And if it hasn't affected you yet, the trend, or anyone in your family, if the trend continues, it more than likely will. So let's go to break.
A special event can be very challenging and stressful at times. Our staff of professionals organizes your event down to every last detail, no matter what size. Our creativity and attention to detail turn your ordinary parties into an extraordinary event. And Decline provides world-class service. We coordinate quality events. We can provide travel arrangements, accommodations, event sites, caterers, tourists, photographers, transportation, hairstylists, and makeup artists, daily itineraries, and pre-event information such as detailed maps, save-the-date cards, and invitations. Being a custom event planner means that we cater to you. It is our job to find the best possible way to present your event. We have been referred to as Dream Weavers.
When you're searching for the latest news on entertainment, the economy, business, technology, and creative arts, choose
the Digital Conglomerate Magazine.
Not only do they give you all the latest information, but they're there for you 24/7, baby, giving you the 411 and all you need to know, baby. Visit the Digital Conglomerate Magazine online. Just Google us, baby. We're everywhere. Let's get down to business. So you're having that company function or business function, and you need the proper services to get that business menu pumped. Okay, here's the solution. Call Exquisite Barista Services. Exquisite Barista Services has the experience to create a signature beverage for your business or organization. Services also include barista training, custom beverage menu creation, food and beverage pairing, and so much more. Visit Exquisite Barista Services online at www.exquisiteexpressinc.com, or better yet, call 210-701-0143. That's 210-701-0143. Don't take your chances on the other man. Get that grand plan and choose Exquisite Barista Services.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Show Talk with Angela Butler. We have Mr. James Costin Jr. on Show Talk with Angela Butler. We're discussing the prison system, the criminal justice system, the unfairness of it, among other things. Mr. James.
Yes.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the school system. Now, the school system here in the United States is becoming quite prevalent. According to my research, that black American children are more likely to be suspended, labeled as juvenile delinquents before they are 18. And they're also more likely, correct me if I'm wrong, to be tried as adults than any other race of people. Am I correct?
I believe so. I'm not that read up on that. I do believe that there are school-to-prison pipelines in existence where because of the need to fill beds in these private facilities, some of the school officials have actually made agreements with the prison system in some way to or for minimal offenses and small offenses to just send them on to a facility. But that I haven't read a whole lot about it, but I have heard about those situations.
Do you leave? Now, you said you don't know a whole lot about it, but I'll say this. I believe that if this trend continues like it has since the 80s, that there will be more blacks in prison than there are right now if the trend continues in both urban America and rural America, black America, and in the Mexican community. Do you believe this?
If the current trends continue, yes. However, what has started happening as a result of some of the movements like yours and others against the incarceration practices, and also because of some human rights issues. For an example, in California, the California prison system was ordered by the Supreme Court to release 157% of their inmate population. And even after doing so, they're still overcrowded. And now that particular movement was because of the inhumane conditions in the facilities. Not so much about the fact that, you know, folks are just being arrested, you know, for having, you know, small amounts of marijuana, because of, you know, some of the almost bogus charges. That really didn't come into play about that situation in California. But if the trends continue the way that they have been, yes, it will be the same amount, if not more. However, there for the past 2 years, there has been a drop in incarceration and prison population. That was for the past 2 years. Now those numbers are pretty current. Those numbers are pretty current. I just checked as recent, I think it's December, and I think it was actually January where I got the statistics for 2012, sorry.
Well, that's good news. That's good news. Incarcerating blacks that seemed not to be able to afford their own attorney is quite prevalent. It seems like a lot of people who are charged with a crime, it's almost like they're guilty to proven innocent when it's supposed to be innocent to proven guilty. But
it seems
like if they have a state-appointed attorney, it's like they're going to his courtroom and they're saying, next, you know. And
right.
You know, and am I correct on this?
Yeah, not only are they doing it that way, the court-appointed attorneys in a lot of cases they're trying to encourage the offenders to take a plea. Some instances, if a certain amount of marijuana was found, and if you were to extend your court case with a lawyer, that a paid lawyer, a lot of instances would be thrown out because of various reasons. No real surefire way of knowing who possessed the marijuana if some is found in the facility. Those kind of cases exist. But I think the biggest villain has been plea bargaining, where the state funded or the state supplied offender attorney encourages the offender to take a plea of guilty with the hope that they'll either get out of jail today or have a shorter sentence if they were to try to take this to court or to trial. What tends to happen in those cases, these men and women would possibly get out today or tomorrow and have these real long probated sentences that tends to be almost impossible for them to fulfill. 30-year probated sentences. Yeah. 30-year preventive. Yeah, and to go back to the communities that are failing, that are a little disorganized and not really having a chance at completing that probated sentence successfully.
And that's the whole reason they want people to plea bargain. So you will end up back in the criminal justice system.
Right.
I mean, that's why they're doing it.
Right. Right. Some systems have been brought up against charges. I think the ACLU took some of these systems in Texas to court. One of the district attorneys, I think, in Texas was caught with his hand in the cookie jar with, you know, offering a person who absolutely did not commit a crime, and the person wanting to plead, you know, not guilty, but they were threatening this lady with 25 to life on a charge that she was totally not guilty about, and so she refused to take that plea. And so the ACLU stepped in and worked with her and defended her court case. I think they eventually threw the case out because the district attorney didn't want to be exposed as one that was practicing an unfair on sentences.
Okay.
So yeah, that does happen. And it takes a lot of us to make the system aware that we know that this is going on and this really has to stop. We really have to step up.
Yeah, we as a people, as humanity, as human beings, need to step up and say this is wrong.
Yeah, as a community,
this is wrong. Most of the people who are doing these things are nonviolent offenders.
Right.
Those that are not nonviolent offenders, I feel for you. It's ridiculous. You see more police in the black community arresting people and stopping people than you do any other community, so it seems like. And Mexicans too, Spanish people too, Puerto Ricans too, but it's went on so long for black America. There was slavery, there was segregation, there was integration, and then there was the Jim Crow laws, and it's just horrible what they're doing to us as a people.
Well, when you talk about policing, I think it's interesting because I remember growing up, and I'm old enough, I'm 57 years old, and I remember a time when I lived in a black community in rural North Carolina. And the civil rights movement was going on. But one of the things I want to make crystal about the community that I grew up in was that if I did something wrong around the corner from my home, the police weren't there, but what is actually called informal social control was there and in place. What that means is that if I did something that I shouldn't have been doing around the corner, by the time I got home, my parents knew about what I was doing around the corner. And if they didn't find out that day, they found out eventually. Right? The informal social control was dismantled. And I think that you may remember some of the steps. Prayer in school. It's okay to tell if you got a whipping at home. And now parents really have difficulty discerning how to discipline their children. Because
yeah,
now
because
you got,
it can be considered abuse.
Right. So now you've got parents who have difficulty making a decision about how to discipline their kids. Okay. So when that form of informal social control has been dismantled, formal social control, which is policing, the criminal justice system, it stepped right in and started incarcerating these people.
Yeah.
Okay.
First they made it hard. I understand what you're saying. I shouldn't interrupt you, but they made it hard for you to discipline your children. It's like my grandmother. Back in the day, my grandmother used to say, I'm whooping you so the others don't whoop you because they won't have mercy on you. And
right.
I thought that was horrible. But now
right.
I understand that because if
right.
you're not allowed to discipline your children and everything is considered just about abuse,
right.
they're going to discipline for you. I'm not
right.
saying they as the entire race of people. I'm talking about the criminal justice system with disciplining your children for you. But yet if you discipline, it's illegal.
Yeah, that formal social control has stepped in and has been the ruler in our community from this point on. One of the when you talk about the amount of police in the community, I rarely saw police in our community, but there was not much for them to do when I was growing up in our community. There was not much. I remember very little for the police to do in the community that I grew up in, North Carolina. And in Atlanta, when we moved to Atlanta in 65, there was very little for the police to do in our community. But that changed with you know, the disciplining and putting more pressure on the family structure. And to tell you how deep that has gotten, there was a church pastor in the Atlanta area that served time. He actually got incarcerated and served time for disciplining one of his congregants, a young child in the congregation. Here more recently, another mega church pastor, I'm not going to call his name, he got incarcerated for disciplining his daughter. And yeah, so it's kind of an indication of how deep this thing has gotten. Not only are you incarcerating folks who are walking around, may have an ashtray full of roaches, marijuana, cigarette butts, whatever you want to call it, to parents, and even further to pastors. You know, it's gotten to a point. This formal social control has gotten to a point where it doesn't really discriminate. It takes everybody in its way. So you have the parents who really don't know what to say to their kids. They don't know how to discipline their kids. And the kids are actually walking up and down the street all times of day. When I was young, you really couldn't. If you were supposed to be in school, you had to be in school. Now you can see kids walking up and down the street all day long. And even though there's a police presence in the community, you see kids doing any range of things, and most of them have already dropped out of school. The high school graduation rate has gotten to be 30%. These are the kinds of things that happen in informal social control. That's mom and pa and this rolls around the corner and the store owner down the street watching out for you and making sure that you were doing what your big brothers, your big sisters, we had more of a feel for each other and a concern for each other, a concern enough to make sure that everybody's doing the right thing. Our communities have gotten, here's another sociological term for you, have gotten so disorganized. what we're seeing right now is social disorganization as a result of all of these things that I have been mentioning. And so the social disorganization is at a point where even preachers, the churches, school teachers, mentors, it doesn't matter, community leaders, nobody can influence the youth in any other way. As a matter of fact, if you would ask me, it appears that everybody's scared of the kids, scared of the way the things, scared of what our society has created. And not only that, scared of what the results of listening to a lot of the music that is that has been pushed by some of the major recording labels that's encouraging people to try to live a life that they're really unfamiliar with. It's just a lot of disorganization going on in our communities right now. And so in order to make that change, and it has to happen from the groundswell. It's not going to happen from the top down. The community has to actually get together and say, wait a minute, enough is enough. Enough is enough. We can control, we can actually control our communities. And so the guys are being released from prison. It can be a great source of information and a great help to help police the community, if you will. Because many of them don't get released to come out to try to do the same things over and over again. They actually want to come home and be safe and feel like they could actually live a productive life. But they come home to a disorganized community and they recidivate.
And also the stigma in the black community. Once you've been in jail or prison or been charged with something or found guilty or something, even plea bargained to something, the stigma does not go in the minds of the people within the black community. And not only that, the black Americans have served their time. Do you think things get better or worse, job-wise, voting-wise, public housing? I already know the answer, but.
Yes, if I'm understanding your question correctly. You asked me if things are getting better, if we're going to get better the way that
get better after they have served their time and been incarcerated and they get out? Do things get any better for the ex-felon?
I think that what happens in the minds of an offender, it can vary. However, it's not real pleasant being incarcerated. And for the most part, an offender spends time trying to think about how they can avoid going back. And so that mindset stays pretty much the same for the most part. I'm not going to say it's always the case, but for the most part, for the guys who've gotten caught with some marijuana or even with crack, who have a crack habit, and they've spent some time to think, maybe even detox from that stuff, maybe even went through some kind of drug therapy or some kind of treatment or some 12-step meetings, they actually have a mindset. They have a transformation that while inside that has absolutely nothing to do with us, sadly. It has absolutely nothing to do with us who are on the outside. They make this transformation on their own with the programs that are available to them inside. They come back out to us, and we actually do more harm to them than good. The community is still disorganized. The dope is still on the street. Everybody is still doing the same things that they were doing when nothing has changed. Nothing in our communities have changed. So, no, unless we change our approach to assisting the ex-offender, unless we change our approach to taking back our communities, unless we change our concepts about the ex-offender, if we actually say, okay, here are some of the basic needs we know this person is going to have, and try to make sure that there are facilities available for them to find out where to go get the basic needs for reentry. Now, I propose the church. I'm trying to encourage the church to take a lead in this in our community. It's because the church was the bellwether for civil rights against the Jim Crow back in the 60s.
Yes.
I think that we could probably do the same thing against this Jim Crow.
Okay. Now, ex-felons, ex-offenders, they usually are not allowed to vote, move into public housing, and it's very hard for them to find a job or work. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much the case, yes.
So you said that those conditions that you named and the ones I named, and this vicious cycle leads them to being sent back to prison?
Would it? Yeah. What happened? Yeah, I agree with that, because once if an ex-offender comes out to the same conditions and feels the same frustration and feels the resistance and ostracization, I think that they will resort to some of the same things that they resorted to before. Now, if the transformation while inside has been deep enough, then the ex-offender will recognize all of these things just as just being stresses and pressures and basically an illusion to make them think a particular way. But the reality is, it is this way out here. But there are some opportunities available for the ex-offender if he were to step back and maybe even consider another community or a community where folks are a little more progressive and about the ex-offender, where there's not so much drug in the community and in the streets, where there's not so much of the stuff that may have been a part of his former life. But if nothing changes in the community, the ex-offender will come out. Of course, like you said, many of them don't care about voting. They probably weren't voting before they got incarcerated. They probably weren't concerned about some of the other things. But once they actually come out and become a productive member of society, they should have the opportunities to exercise all of their rights, because they have actually served their time.
Yes.
They have paid their debt. They have paid their debt to society, so they should be able to exercise all of their rights as a free citizen. But that's not the case right now. The community really has to be a little more hands-on about pushing these issues up the legislative level to where policies get changed. Just like what happened in Jim Crow of the 60s. This thing, it was just as ridiculous in the 60s, and from the leaders of the black church back in the 60s, and other, not just the black church, but there were other movements in the 60s that helped facilitate the law changes of laws that kind of righted some wrongs, but as time progressed and left unattended, those that want to continue on with this system of marginalization of Black America will figure out some other way to do so, and they did. So these men and women will recidivate if they are not able to live their lives as free citizens, and if they're not able to have the same life or job trajectories as the next man.
Okay.
The voting is crucial, because that's if we're pushing it across up to changing policy or law to the lawmakers, then we're going to need their votes to help pass these bills, pass these laws. So, they really need to be considered participants and citizens of the community, and embraced in a way that empowers them
Okay. All right. Do you believe, now this has nothing to do with the system, but I happen to believe that the current, do you believe that the current president, president, respectfully, of course, President Barack Obama, will pass reparations for black Americans like the former presidents did for the Jews and other Americans?
I'm not that read up on that. I believe that, like any president of the USA, if the bills cross his desk, if he has the opportunity, Mr. President, he has shown me time and time again that he will do the right thing. But I have not read up on the reparation. I have not read up on that, nor do I know what state, what process that's, you know, where that is in this process.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that I think Mr. President will do the right thing once it crosses his desk. I don't think that he should have to write the bill and push it up the legislative ladder himself. I don't think that's presidential. But if the bill is done through the legislative processes and it gets to his desk, then I think that Mr. President will do the right thing.
Now, before the show,
he would at least attempt to do the right thing.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Sorry,
before the show, yesterday, I was talking to you about you said there was a president passed a law that jobs should go overseas. Which president was that?
That
jobs don't require a high school diploma. They all went overseas.
Bill Clinton who pushed the NAFTA, North American Free Trade Act, which basically allowed for globalization with manufacturing, meaning that multinational, basically was the birth of multinational corporations, or at least made it kind of legal to do so, where Coca-Cola Coca-Cola finds that it costs them 60 cents to produce a $2 bottle of Coca-Cola in Atlanta, Georgia, but they found that it costs less than a penny to do it in another country. Then, of course, these companies opted for moving their manufacturing facilities to places where the costs, where their overhead would be the lowest. Now it's interesting that you bring that up, and this is not, it's just conjecture at this point, and you know what they say about opinions. I happen to believe that with the movement toward bringing the corporations bringing them back to America brings up an interesting predicament for privatized prisons, because it's,
yes, privatized and privately owned prisons. Yes,
right.
So it's stock market too, and that's ridiculous.
Right. So if the companies are not able to produce in the other countries at pennies, then they will probably be able to do that in prisons, and it's an interesting trend. It's interesting to see how this all pans out.
It's all planned out.
It's interesting to see how it pans out. I don't know if it's planned.
To me,
it seems like it is planned out. But like I said, I have. If you actually watch and read, if you actually know a little bit about the histories of some things, you kind of you see patterns, and I'm starting to see some of these patterns. So I'm actually believing that, okay, so the corporations are not going to be able to make, use manufacturing facilities in the developing countries. All right, so what's the next best thing? If you're being hard-nosed about them bringing these factories back to America and hiring Americans, then, okay, well, we'll bring them back to America and we'll hire Americans, but they may not be free Americans. They may be impoverished and imprisoned Americans.
That is wrong. That is flat out wrong. Greed and racism is what it's called.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that is wrong also. That is wrong.
Well, you know, the whole system of capitalism is based on getting paid. That's basically what that means. It's just, you know, get paid by any means necessary. Now, getting paid is okay because everybody wants to get paid, but to get paid by any means necessary is what, in fact, is in my mind, very wrong, yes.
But black Americans were already kidnapped, brought over here on the ship, chained, among other crimes that were committed against blacks. This is wrong. They were kidnapped, which is a crime. They were brought over here against their will. they had the freedom taken away. There were so many crimes committed against black Americans still being committed. That is wrong.
Yeah.
Nothing can be done to stop this from happening. That's the way I'm starting to feel, because I know it's wrong, but I'm just one person.
Yeah. Well, you're not just one person. As a matter of fact, a lot of people are starting to recognize that the unfair practices from a lot of different levels. The only thing that will change any of this is to have this stuff or have a bunch of people frustrated enough to want to make a difference. And then once this frustration actually gets pushed up to a level of to where it matters, for an example, it just everybody, you know, gets in touch with the congressman and the congressman takes it the way it needs to be taken from them, then that's how things are going to have to happen. But we can't expect, and I'm a firm believer in this, we can't expect this change to be made from the top down. You know, they've been talking about trickle down. No, it's going to have to go up. You, folks like you, folks like me, folks who are or have been incarcerated need to be a part of a movement to push matters upward to policymakers and hopes that things are changed at the legislative level.
People who are for those things that you just named that I'm completely against need to get out of office. Need to be voted out.
Hell yeah.
But how are we going to do that when there's such a high percentage of blacks in prison in America where we can't vote them out?
Yeah. We could continue to do things like what you're doing and what I'm doing. You're presenting a forum for folks to talk about it, and I talk about it. And just hope that folks get educated. I mentioned earlier that I was just in a class where we talked about these kinds of things, and one of the presenters, I was a presenter, but another one of the presenter was an ex-offender. She had been incarcerated for 27 years. 27 years, Angela. Can you imagine being incarcerated for 27 years?
Yes, sir. That Miss Daniel Mitz was incarcerated about that long, and she's still in prison.
Wow. Yeah, okay, so she is a part.
The show is at the end, sir. 10 seconds.
Okay. Well, I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate
Thank
you having
you.
Me on. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.